Ready to level up your day? Then join me and my friends at LoneStarCasino.com. That's L-O-N-E-S-T-A-R Casino, where you can experience the thrill of Las Vegas, no matter where you are. LoneStarCasino.com is an absolutely free-to-play social casino with thousands of games, daily bonuses, free spins, and jackpots that pop like fireworks. Hit pause on life and hit play on LoneStarCasino.com.
Lone Star Casino is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit LoneStarCasino.com for more details.
Sign up today for an incredible welcome bonus. Play bold. Win big. Ready to level up your day? Then join me and my friends at LoneStarCasino.com. That's L-O-N-E-S-T-A-R Casino, where you can experience the thrill of Las Vegas, no matter where you are. LoneStarCasino.com is an absolutely free-to-play social casino with thousands of games, daily bonuses, free spins, and jackpots that pop like fireworks. Hit pause on life and hit play on LoneStarCasino.com.
Lone Star Casino is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit LoneStarCasino.com for more details.
Sign up today for an incredible welcome bonus. Play bold. Win big.
You're listening to continuing coverage of the Rust shooting trial against Alec Baldwin from the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today. Now back to the courtroom.
All right. Defendant Alec Baldwin's motion in limine to preclude argument, evidence, and testimony regarding the victim.
Thank you, Your Honor. We addressed this briefly earlier when I withdrew our request to admit the medical records. And it's axiomatic and not disputed that a victim's good character and all the wonderful things about them is not relevant to a criminal trial. They don't really dispute that. What they do is they try to sort of come up with ways to backdoor that evidence by giving other reasons. Like they say, well, we need to explain why Mr. Souza hired Ms. Hutchins. And so Mr. Souza needs to explain all the background about Ms. Hutchins in order to explain his hiring process, which is, of course, completely irrelevant in the first place and an obvious backdoor and not particularly intellectually honest. Then they say, well, the reason we have to explain where she was born and how she grew up is because there's one moment in this case in thousands of pages in which one witness mentions that she speaks Russian to another witness. So in order to understand that, you have to understand where she grew up in Ukraine and all of that and her childhood and all of that to understand that. And of course, that's also intellectually dishonest. And all you have to say, if you care about making sure this court is and this jury does not, you know, decide this based on emotion and sympathy and the wrong reasons, is you have to say, did she speak Russian? Yes. Did you understand she understood Russian? Yes. You don't have to go into the 30 years of history here. So that's the way to deal with that. In terms of exhibits, it's also very, very simple. They talk about the lapels. I agree with them. The lapels at the scene are relevant. You don't show the positions of the bodies on the ground. It's not relevant. It's not in dispute. It's not a fact in dispute. It doesn't tend to prove anything. I agree with them. The autopsy is relevant, not the photos. The photos don't help anything. The person who's doing the autopsy is more than sufficient. And let me say something else, and this is why I wanted to quickly withdraw the application for the medical records, which is we don't dispute anything about any of this. This is not an issue in this case. You will not hear us cross-examining or questioning the fact that she passed away or the cause. In the other trial in which he presided off, there was at least some testimony, some indicia that they intended to proceed that way, and maybe that had something to do with why so much of that evidence came in. That is not an issue in this trial. It's just not. And so every single time that evidence comes in, it's wholly irrelevant because I've just told the court we're not making an issue of it, and it's extremely prejudicial. It is the most extreme possible weighing of the scales that one could ever have, because it is completely irrelevant, because I'm saying, I agree, she passed away because of this. So, and their real reasons for doing this is obviously exposed.
Okay, so you're sort of combining everything. Why don't you go through each one that you identified?
Sure. The character of the deceased victims I just did, mm-hmm. The moment of death and subsequent pain is obviously completely relevant. The emotion, they say in here.
Did you say completely relevant?
Irrelevant. They say that the reason that they're eliciting it is to bolster witness credibility. That is a per se improper reason. They say evidence is relevant and explains a witness's conduct and bolsters. They're using emotional sympathy, drama of something to bolster a witness's credibility. The fact that she suffered might be irrelevant or admissible in a wrongful death case. It's not in a homicide case. It's nothing to do with it. Nothing. And to the idea that they're going to use it so that the witness is upset on a witness stand and saying, and this is how she fell, and her face was pale, and this, and now everybody's upset, and trust me, I saw what I saw about something relevant, is exactly what a court can't allow. It's exactly what a court can't allow. And they did this the entire trial, and I mentioned this before, with the, where is she now? Is she in the medical vac? They ask all of these, why is even one time, the tone of her skin as she falls, why is that possibly relevant to this trial? And they do it with every single witness. Every single witness they did it with. So then you get to the lapel cameras and the autopsy photos. And so I was trying to track this precisely. Again, we agree that the lapels of the scene are relevant, right? You just don't need to show a body on the ground. It's just not necessary. And the autopsy photos are particularly problematic. They don't show, how are they relevant? We could stay here for days and no one could explain to me how the autopsy photos are relevant. They're not. If the court wants to voir dire the medical examiner and say, is it possible for you to explain this without presenting these graphic, vivid depictions of a tragically killed person, they're going to say, of course I can. Autopsy photos get ruled out all the time, especially in cases like this. This is not, you know, a whodunit, where it's like, okay, let's look at this, but I'm saying I didn't do it. This is a tragic accident where two people who are known to each other and not no animosity towards each other, this occurred. And so it doesn't have anything to do with the case or anything relevant. And I'm telling the court that we're not making an issue of this. So if the court knows that, unlike in the Hannah Gutierrez retrial, that this is not in dispute, I really don't understand the basis to allow a single witness to do any of that. A single witness, let alone the cumulative, every single witness, which is just being done to taint the jury and to try to get the jury to do something on sympathy. Thank you.
The state has no intention of presenting evidence related to Ms. Hutchins' childhood. So we can eliminate that right off the bat.
What do you plan on?
Well, we believe that there is limited testimony from Mr. Souza that's appropriate because jurors don't know how the film industry works. He should be able to take the witness stand and say, as the director, I got to pick my director of photography. Here's what the director of photography does. These are the reasons I picked this person. We're not going to have him talk about, she's an honest person. She's an amazing mother. She's an amazing wife. None of that's coming in. But he gets to tell, we get to put the story in context for the jury. And I think that we can do that without doing all of these things that the defense is claiming are so highly prejudicial. I have no problem limiting that testimony with regard to Ms. Hutchins, but certainly the jury gets to hear what she did, how she was hired, how does this come together? How do all of these people come together on this movie set? That's absolutely relevant. Now, with regard to the lapel videos, the defense says, we think the lapel videos are relevant, but we just don't want the jury to see the human part of it. And that's kind of hard for the state because we kind of have to prove that a human being was killed. That's part of what we have to do here. So the other thing that you have to understand is that the defense probably is going to take a similar tactic in this regard that we saw in Gutierrez, and they're going to question all of the law enforcement officers about, why didn't you do better? Why couldn't you have done this, and why couldn't you have done that? And the answer is, this was extremely chaotic. We've never shown up to a crime scene where there were 150 witnesses there. There were people mulling around everywhere. There were things that we had to do. Those lapel videos show how difficult and chaotic that scene was, and it goes directly to their defense. They act like these lapel videos are like a horror movie. You see Ms. Hutchins on the ground, you don't even see blood. You don't even see blood coming out of her. You see, Mr. Souza's yelling because he got shot in the shoulder. That's not overly prejudicial. Absolutely not. There is tons of case law where, and the lapel video of them laying on the ground is very, very similar in terms of the analysis as the autopsy photos. Autopsy photos come in. They do. They come in every single case. I have never had a case where autopsy photos were excluded. And I even cite to a case in my response where the court actually says, basically, we've never heard of a case where there was a reason to exclude these. They just come in. Now listen, I want this court to know that during Gutierrez and during this trial, there are autopsy photos in this case that are shocking to the conscience. That we could argue successfully are relevant. Because when you crack open somebody's body, you can see how the bullet traveled. And autopsy photos actually show that. We're not asking to get those in. We are doing exactly what we did in Gutierrez. We have just 2 to 4 very benign autopsy photos. We have been more than reasonable in terms of trying to turn down the volume on emotional response with regard to these autopsy photos. I was actually stunned to see this motion after we exercised so much restraint during the Gutierrez trial. And those are the same pictures. We haven't upped the ante here. We're not trying to show anything other than, look, this is where the bullet entered. This is where the bullet came out. Those are relevant. Those are relevant to Dr. Jarrell's testimony. Those come in. They come in every single trial. There's just a reality associated with the fact that someone died. I am more than surprised to hear Mr. Spiro come up here and say, we are not disputing the cause of death. The whole reason that we have probably 4 or 5 witnesses on our witness list is because the defendant put Dr. Bianca Alvarez on their witness list. They called her, talked to her on the phone without inviting us. And the whole point to doing that has to do with this farce defense of she didn't die of a gunshot wound. She died because she wasn't intubated properly. So I want to say right now, because we're short on time in this trial, if the defense is not intending to make any arguments that she died because of a faulty intubation, let me know, because I can shave a lot of witnesses off my witness list that way. Thank you.
State did not address even slightly in either their motion papers, in the Hannah Gutierrez retrial, or in that response, anything about how ashen she is or how the moments happen after matter. They don't. They didn't address it in their papers. They didn't just address it now, right? So I just want to make sure that the court, as the court was well to point out to me, you know, demarked these issues. They have not addressed that. There is no dispute that that's not possibly relevant to talk about how the person was dying and what their skin looked like and their breathing. It's just not relevant. They then go into this, you know, how Mr. Souza selected her to understand the film industry working. You know, Your Honor, it's like they don't ask a single other witness, right? Well, how did you get hired? And why did you get hired, right? I mean, so I'm sure that the court sees through this. You know, if somebody were to say to me, this is the one question and answer and there was an offer to proof, I'm sure we could work this out. But how can I possibly trust this process if we don't hear that exactly because of what I've seen? And then I'll just deal with the autopsy photos. Again, we're stipulating to identity and that she's deceased and that we're not saying that some other causal factor killed her. So this makes the balancing test very, very easy. That doesn't happen in every homicide case, right? And also, you know, I don't say these things in front of juries, but I actually prosecuted homicide cases. No, and often there is a discussion over, they don't always come in, and often there is this thing where sometimes prosecutors want to put them in to gin up the jury, and judges make calls all the time that it's just not necessary. We don't need to remember her that way. We don't need to do that in this case. I don't need to do that in this case. And this court can very well, like the court said to me when this hearing opened, take order of the court and has the discretion to say, no, pictures of this tragic dead body is not necessary here. I'm telling the court again, I'll say it now, I think a second time, which is we are not making an issue out of the cause of death, period. They want to take these people off the witness list, they can. But if that's what we're doing, and I've withdrawn our seeking the medical records, then I've left the court with a very simple, in my judgment, balancing test. And I'd ask the court to really think about if this, when this verdict comes down, having faith that this was a fair trial and the verdict was based on the right reasons, you can't have, I mean, it's hours of testimony, hours in the Hannah Gutierrez Street trial about it, and it's different here because the gun was in his hand. The gun was in his hand. So to allow hours and hours of testimony, when we have the state has 5 days to present this case and we need the opportunity to rigorously cross-examine, it doesn't make any sense. I don't think it's fair, and I don't think the court should allow it. Thank you.
All right, the court makes the following ruling. All right, with respect to the character of deceased, of the deceased, certainly if Mr. Baldwin was going to get up, you'd want to go, how did you come about getting this this job, so to speak? And I think it's just an introductory way to tell the story. Now, I do remember Mr. Sosa going into, we met, I liked her, we had things in common, you know, et cetera, et cetera. I think all that needs to be said is that she was one of some choices. He felt that she was a good fit and that she was the director of photography. That's it. Okay. Now, with respect to the moment of death and subsequent pain, I think that does go to the death. That's one of the elements, and the death and the injury, and I do think that makes a fact more probative, and that is the death, and that I don't think that is. Its probative value substantially outweighed by unfair prejudice. Having said that, I'm trying to recall everything that occurred regarding that, and I do think that the video is appropriate. Now, I think there were some people that got up, and this may be what both of you have referred to, where they talked about being upset, they talked about how upsetting it was and things like that. We don't need that. We just need the lapels. Videos as to what happened with respect to her being shot and Mr. Sousa being shot as well. So that's the lapel camera depicting the crime scene. Am I misunderstanding anything else on that?
From the defense's perspective, a lot of this also goes to 403 and cumulative list, right?
So could you just answer my question? Okay.
Yeah, well, I think the answer
I don't want you to argue again. You already had your chance.
I think the answer is yes, Your Honor. If I understood the court's ruling, I think the answer is that yes, if the lapel videos are the way that they're going to show where the bodies were or
so
the man...
When Lieutenant Benavides is in there and he says, everybody clear out, is that the video?
And primarily also Officer LaFleur, who's the first officer on scene, that video
right.
Also.
Where people are rendering aid?
Right.
Yeah. All right. So that comes in. Autopsy photos. You can stipulate, that's fine, but they're allowed to tell their story and they're allowed to demonstrate the death. I do remember there was an autopsy photo that was pretty much agreed it was prejudicial, or maybe it was somewhere else, where her shirt, I think, which part of the autopsy photos, I don't know. But the autopsy photos, in my mind, are the body.
So, just to iron it out right now, we've got the pretty much the same photos of the body that we showed during Gutierrez, nothing overly dramatic. And there is a photo of her, of the bloody clothing, and part of the reason that's relevant is because her cause of death was exsanguination, so she bled to death. So the photos of that amount of blood go directly to her cause of death.
I will allow that. All right. You can revisit that, defense, but I do anticipate you may bring up some information about the tubing.
Just to say that there, and I know the court has one more argument, but the court's looking, I think, looking at me for guidance on this. That we're not going to do that. We're not maybe going to do that. We're not going to do that. So when we say that we're not going to do that, the court can count on that, and that makes those.
Well, you didn't say that. That's my point.
Oh, I thought that that's what I was going to address.
You could ask the doctor. You said you didn't care about the UNM records, but that you didn't say you weren't going to ask the doctor.
If I wasn't clear, I'll make it more clear, which is we are not going to ask the doctor about that. Mm-hmm. So if we're not going to ask, that we're not going to seek to introduce the medical records, and we're not asking the doctor about that, there isn't a basis of relevancy anymore. There just isn't. And so I'm asking the court that they now have several ways the court has just allowed for them to present that this was a death, which we concede. So right?
All right, that's fine. But they still get to do it. I'm saying no to you.
Correct.
All right, so let's not do the shirt if they're not... Well, no, I'm going to allow the shirt. You said that she bled to death. There's nothing wrong with that. All right.
And I'm going to start calling off witnesses then to testify that she was correctly intubated. Are we clear that the defense is not going to raise that issue?
We are not raising that issue as to the cause of death, and we maintain our objections to the exhibits, and we understand the court's ruling.
So, just to be clear, the video, and all I'm remembering is the video, okay? So, if there's something else that comes in about in the church, then we need to revisit this, because I am making a ruling about the video. I don't remember if there were any photos. I don't think there were photos, but I remember the video. Okay? They get to put on what the church looked like. Secondly, and you know, also that gives an understanding of where Mr. Sosa was for various reasons. Then with respect to the autopsy photos, I'm not sure whether that shirt is more prejudicial than probative. You can get out that she bled to death in different ways. I'm not sure that that's necessary. I'll revisit that.
Okay. And what I can do, Judge, if it helps, I can email copies of the photos to you so you can look at them. I mean, but the Dr. Gerald isn't scheduled. The photos come in through Dr. Gerald, but she's not scheduled to testify until the end of our case.
I don't want
to
revisit the autopsy body photos.
No. I hear you. I can send you... No. And I apologize. I understand why I just got my wires crossed. The some of the photos of the bloody clothes were taken by OMI. So what I can do is I can email to you, and of course CC the defense, those photos of bloody clothing so that you can look at them and you can make a determination long before the witness ever takes the witness stand what's appropriate and what isn't. Understanding autopsy is something different. You've already ruled on that.
All right. Thank you for that.
Your Honor. If we may go back to the state's motion, excuse me, defendant's motion on limine number 5, I found the case that the court was referencing.
Okay, what is it?
It's State versus Montoya. It's 2016 Westlaw 3639984. It is a Justice Chavez opinion, and the issue begins in at paragraph 42 and 44, where the court did not allow the defense to introduce the prosecution's opening statements or statements during opening in a previous trial.
There's two State versus Montoya's.
Yes, Your Honor. This one is, it's a Westlaw site.
Oh, I see. Okay.
It's 2016, 36399. Oh, sorry. I just lost it. Let me go back. So it's 2016, Westlaw 3639984. And it's Justice Chavez's opinion.
And Your Honor, we can take a look at that in the break as well and give you our views, if we may.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Just wanted to see if it was the one I remember. Okay. All right, State's motion in limine 8 to allow use of exhibits during opening statement.
Your Honor, we don't have I think there's a way to shortcut this, which is that as long as the defense can also put in exhibits and the court will, if there's any issue between the two sides, address those one or two issues, I'm hoping that there's not. We would not, as long as it's equal to both sides, we would not have an issue.
Are they going to be admitted?
Yes, Your Honor. In fact, I provided defense counsel this morning a copy of the exhibits. I have a copy for the court if you'd like to look at them. What I would request is that they provide us today with a copy of the exhibits that they intend to introduce.
All right, but do you think there's going to be an issue on admission at trial?
No, Your Honor.
I don't believe there's of the exhibits that we're putting forth. We're putting forth basically the same set, a little bit more of a videotape or a little less, and the 911 call. That's it. So there's very few exhibits that we're using in opening, and I don't think any of them are an issue.
All right. Well, I want you all to agree because I do not want us to stop in opening statement, okay?
Yes, Your Honor.
So if you don't agree, let me know.
Yes, Your Honor.
All right. Defendant Alec Baldwin's motion in limine to preclude argument, testimony, and evidence related to the incident from the club.
Thank you, Your Honor. We move to exclude the state presenting evidence of what happened on the Crow as evidence of Mr. Baldwin's state of mind here. The state has said it will not present evidence of what happened on the Crow, but what the state did say is it intends to address and present the theory essentially from the Crow that blanks can kill. Mr. Baldwin knew that, and therefore he's responsible for having the criminal state of mind necessary to prove involuntary manslaughter here. There are four problems with that, Your Honor. The first is, let's go back to the indictment. The indictment says that Mr. Baldwin is being charged because it was foreseeable to him that if he didn't check the gun for live ammunition, it says nothing about blanks, not a single word, then his use of the gun by pointing it and pulling the trigger, they allege, could cause significant risk of harm to human life. That was the theory of the indictment. Live ammunition, nothing about blanks. A few witnesses mentioned here and there blanks in the context of an accidental discharge. They get loud. You have to put your goggles on, your earmuffs on. People get mad. There is no testimony in this case about that, that blanks kill in this particular situation. The case theory has always been, they've said it over and over and over in the papers they've submitted to you, Mr. Baldwin didn't check for live ammunition. He pointed the gun, he pulled it, and then Ms. Hutchins died. So they're trying to vary significantly from the theory of the indictment. Problem number two, causation. Mr. Baldwin not checking for blanks and then pointing the gun did not kill Ms. Hutchins. She was not killed by a blank. She was killed by a live round. And all the testimony shows that blanks are very different from live bullets. If Mr. Baldwin checked for a blank, there would have been no blanks there. And so they have a major causation issue as a matter of law in presenting this brand new theory that was not in the indictment. Number three, there's a foreseeability problem as a matter of law with their intention to present the blanks theory. The Henley case, as Your Honor knows, we've briefed it for you, says the requisite criminal state of mind needs to match or converge, is what the case says, with the criminal act. And what the state's doing here is they're playing apples and oranges. They're saying Mr. Baldwin had the reckless criminal state of mind because he knew that blanks can kill. That was foreseeable to him. He didn't check for blanks, and then Ms. Hutchins died. But the act that he's been charged with is not he didn't check for blanks and Ms. Hutchins died as a result of a blank. It's that she died as a result of a live bullet. So they're mixing apples and oranges here. They're trying to take what they say is a foreseeable risk and match it with an act that didn't cause the death. So that violates the very clear requirement of Henley that the state of mind and the act converge. That's not what they're saying here. And then last but not least, there is zero evidence in this case, zero, that Ms. Hutchins would have died, or it was expected that she would have died, if you look at the foreseeability cases, if there were a blank in that gun. The foreseeability cases say it's not what can conceivably occur. Blanks can kill. It's not what can conceivably occur. It's what's expected, what's objectively and reasonably expected. There's zero evidence in this case. They don't have an expert. They don't have a fact witness that can testify. And certainly a fact witness wouldn't be allowed to testify about this, that if Mr. Baldwin had a blank in that gun, in that moment, it would have killed Ms. Hutchins. Zero. There was no obstruction in the barrel. They keep on saying obstruction in the barrel. There was no obstruction in the barrel. He was feet away, 2 feet, 3 feet, 4 feet away from Ms. Hutchins. It was pointed at her armpit. There's nothing in that gun that could have pierced her body. There is zero evidence. If you look back at The Crow, if you look back at the history of motion pictures, there are two incidents where a blank was involved in a death on a movie set. In 1984, an actor put the gun directly against his head and the pressure pulled the trigger, and the pressure from that directly against his head killed him. In The Crow, so very different from what happened here, miles and miles and years apart. Number two, in The Crow, what happened was the crew was making dummies out of live bullets. And when the dummy was put in to the gun, it still had residual gunpowder. And the primer got hit, it knocked the bullet tip off, it discharged, and then there was a blank loaded behind that live bullet tip from a live bullet that people on the set were making improperly. Still no criminal prosecution there. Said it was civil negligence, not criminal, but that's not the point. The point is, if you look at what happened in both of those cases in the history of motion pictures, they are entirely distinct facts. The state cannot come in at the last minute and say, blanks can kill, Mr. Baldwin knew that, and therefore he had the requisite state of mind, and they match it up with an act that killed Ms. Hutchins. Zero evidence that that would have happened here. And therefore, they cannot present it as a theory when there's no causation for it, there's no foreseeability for it, there's no evidence for it, and it's not in the indictment.
All right, thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
I'm looking at the indictment that was filed in this case. I don't see anything that says live round. I have it right in front of me. So I'm not exactly sure what Mr. Nickus means when he says, if you look at the indictment, he was indicted for that. I'm looking at the indictment. It doesn't say anything about that. So I want to try on occasion to agree with the defense. I want to try to come together. The issue of do we want to have witnesses testify about what happened on the set of The Crow? No, of course not. I intend to present absolutely no testimony. With regard to, I expect no witness to say The Crow. But here's why this is relevant. The entire defense is Mr. Baldwin had no reason to believe that there was a live round on set. Well,
is it on set or in the gun?
I think they've argued both. They've argued that he had no reason to believe that there was a live round on set, that he had no reason to believe that there was a live round in the gun. So, here's what they're going to argue. They're going to say, this gun is completely inert. He should be able to treat it like a toy because everything is completely safe. Yeah, but the problem is that these safety bulletins and these rules that the defendant failed to follow were created because real guns on movie sets are dangerous. That's the whole reason they were created. And one of the ways that we know that they're dangerous is because if you combine a blank with a barrel obstruction, you can kill someone. It's not what Mr. Nickus said, that there's no reason to think that it would have killed anyone. It would have killed her if there was a blank and a barrel obstruction. I agree with him that that's not what happened in this case. But the point is, real guns are dangerous. The SAG safety bulletin from the Screen Actors Guild says blanks can kill, underlined, bold, exclamation marks. Mr. Baldwin's state of mind is what's critical in this case, and Mr. Baldwin understood real guns on movie sets, even best case scenario for him. We imagine that there's no chance that there could be a live round on set. He still knows they're dangerous, and he understands that the rules exist because they're dangerous. The rules that say, don't point it at anyone, keep your finger off the trigger, those are all the things that were designed because real guns on movie sets, even if there's not a live round, can kill people. Mr. Nickus can stand up here and say, blanks don't kill people, they certainly do kill people. And the Screen Actors Guild safety bulletin says blanks can kill. So the problem is that the defense theory is this was a completely inert gun. And the only thing that made it a problem was the fact that there was a live round in it. And that's simply not true. And it goes to Mr. Baldwin's state of mind. It goes to exactly what the state has to prove, which is that he knew or should have known of the risk when he pointed the gun at someone, cocked it, and pulled the trigger, live round or not. He understood that risk. That's what we have to prove, and that's what we're going to prove.
Well, it was in the grand jury hearing that you, the indictment doesn't say it, but
sure.
You did, to get the true bill, you talked about live ammunition in a gun.
Sure, absolutely, and that's certainly a part of this case, and I don't want to pretend that it isn't, because the other thing that we know, and we put this in some of our responses, is that when Mr. Baldwin was being interviewed by Corporal Hancock, he actually said to Corporal Hancock, "I'm wondering if Hannah commingled live rounds with her dummy rounds." He knew that there was a possibility that a live round could find its way on set. He didn't even know that Ms. Hutchins had died yet, and he told Corporal Hancock, "I wonder if they were commingled." He knows that these guns are dangerous. And listen, the state isn't... I've had countless cases where the prosecutor has a slightly different theory at trial than they did in front of the grand jury. There's nothing improper about that. We're not amending... We're not trying to add charges at the last minute. I don't understand exactly what the issue is if there's case law that says that I'm married to absolutely every single theory that was put in front of the grand jury. It's news to me because I've had courts amend grand jury indictments in the middle of trial based on the evidence. And the evidence in this case is that this gentleman knew that you can't point a gun at someone and pull the trigger because even if there's not a live round, it might kill somebody. He knew that, and I agree. We don't have to get into what happened on the Crow, but at the same time, the safety bulletins are made because of that. They exist because of that.
Thank you.
A few issues, Your Honor. In terms of the indictment, it was in the grand jury instructions on which the indictment was based, to be clear. There's nothing in the grand jury instructions, in the indictment, in this case, where the actual allegation of the charge is that Alec Baldwin didn't check for blanks, and therefore he's committed involuntary manslaughter. This, in terms of time, Your Honor, and sensitivity to cumulative witnesses and cases within cases, this is a case within a case. It's a hypothetical case about an act that didn't happen, that didn't cause the death at all, with, on top of that, significant questions about whether it's even possible when we know from the history of motion picture, it's never happened in this way. Who are they going to testify? Who are they going to have testify, the state, that Ms. Hutchins would have died if there were a blank in that gun? What expert witness is going to say that? They don't have a single expert witness. They don't have a single fact witness who's allowed to testify about that. They don't have any evidence that there was an obstruction in the gun. There's literally no evidence of this. And if they want to put on a theory that merges different state of mind with this hypothetical act that didn't cause a death, then we're going to have a very confusing trial with multiple different witnesses being asked, have you ever been on a movie set where a blank killed someone? Have you ever been on a movie set where a blank shot and pierced someone's body in a way that was really dangerous? Have you ever had someone on a movie set shoot a blank in a way that did anything other than cause a little rash or hurt someone's ears or make their eyes have stars in them? We're going to have a trial within a trial about a hypothetical that was not raised until the very last minute and wasn't the basis for the charge in the first place. They have foreseeability issues, they have causation issues, they have evidentiary issues, and there are major notice issues. And in terms of cumulative testimony and wasting of time in cases within cases, that's what this theory is going to become. Thank you, Your Honor.
All right, thank you. All right, the court makes the following ruling weighing whether it has any tendency to make a fact more probable or less probable than it would be without it, and whether its probative value substantially is outweighed by unfair prejudice. I think it's difficult to deal with what I read in the grand jury transcripts about, the theory about the negligent use of a deadly weapon is just his manner of handling, that he shouldn't have cocked the gun, et cetera, et cetera. And then with respect to the alternative, it is that he failed to check the gun He failed to confirm that the gun, I remember the word confirm, about live ammunition before he pointed it at someone. I think that I will not allow any testimony other than one sentence statement, probably by your expert, Ms. Morrissey, that says that blanks can also kill. But to consider that he failed somehow, that's just going to be up to the trier of fact. I think everybody knows guns can kill. It depends on what's in there, but I think that you can mention it. But that's it. We're not going to go through five different questions on tell me how and how serious this is, and he, you know, if he's a gun owner and he's done all these Westerns, or not Westerns, but all this gun experience, and he should have known it. Just say that, and if you can tie that up, great.
Understood.
All right, let's take our lunch break, okay? All right, what else are you going to surprise me with? Exhibits? What are you going to do? I mean, because maybe we can have an hour lunch.
I want a real exhibit list from the defense that doesn't list every piece of evidence.
They probably feel the same way.
Well, we were pretty specific.
I do think that given the court's guidance today that there could be, I'm hoping that the opening exhibits all work out, and I'm hoping that this slowly streamlines a little bit.
The voir dire is 50 minutes max a piece.
You said 50?
50.
Okay.
5-0.
And
let me just be clear on voir dire, so as you're getting ready for it. Questions. I know I'm looking at you, but he's standing. Questions. Not just keep standing. All right, no, okay, you can sit up. Okay, questions. Not your theory, your hi, how are you, you know. Questions, okay? And the issue is fair and impartial, okay? Not maybe this isn't the case for you. We're not shopping. It's fair and impartial, okay?
Yes, sir.
And questions. I'm emphasizing questions. You ask questions. You don't talk to them. Do you understand what I mean? I mean, I'll give you latitude, but I'll have to pull you in if you're not trying to get fair and impartial.
I'm just wondering, in terms of what sent us into individual voir dire during.
I'm not going to do individual voir dire.
Okay.
I think this is different.
And I'm just.
I'll hear you out. Okay, I'm sorry to interrupt you.
No, my and listen, it may not turn out to be an issue, but my only concern is if we start to have potential jurors who say, I don't think that I've seen in the press that he didn't know that the gun was loaded, and I don't think that he should be prosecuted. I think that there was a concern in Gutierrez that if we have all of these jurors just giving their opinions because they've seen things in the press, it kind of poisons the well.
Right.
So that's
first
my
of all,
concern.
First of all, my intent is, and I'm open to hearing from you all, but when that happens, I'm just going to call you up and agree that this person should be stricken for cause and he can leave. What do you think?
Sure.
It would have to depend on the how extreme it was, but I think we'll be able to make eye contact, frankly, and figure out some of this. I'm hopeful. I don't know how the court, I wasn't there at the first trial, and I don't know how the court is planning to design this. There is, of course, in both directions, a risk of pollution of the jury pool, right?
Right.
So I think that if anybody has, extreme views on anything, maybe that's a way to sort of say that you're going to hear questions, and if you think that you have a view that should not be spoken publicly,
mm-hmm,
and you
sure.
would like to speak to me
right.
and the lawyer separately,
right.
You can so indicate when
right.
you raise your hand.
Right.
And,
but
and
that's part of my instruction,
right.
okay, that you can speak in private. And most people start say, well, I want to speak in private. Or you say, do you feel like you should speak in private? And they'll say yes. I'm less inclined to do private voir dire because it just took so long. And the other thing is that, think about it. I think we're going to have 79 on the panel, and we will be able to know immediately. You're going to get five and three. Is that right? Yes,
yeah.
5 and 3, and for causes, and we'll know whether we need a second jury panel by then.
I just want to throw this out there. One of the things that may speed up the process if we do have a juror
and we think that they may have some potentially prejudicial things to say, rather than kicking everybody out of the room, maybe we can just invite that person
up
to the bench.
Yes, I've done that. Yes, I've done that.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. I agree. That makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Was anybody thinking private?
I just wasn't sure.
I think it's easier to do the subset of private when necessary and not invite it at the start. The judges that I try cases in front of always think that if you invite it too early, then it becomes a domino effect. I'm just repeating what other
no,
have said.
No, I expect a lot of folks will want to speak in private about this, but I think this is different, a little different from Hannah Gutierrez.
And will we be addressing the entire group or just...
Yes, 79.
You'll do the whole group in our questioning.
Yes. Right. And then if you can't pick a jury out of 79 folks, which I find highly doubtful, then we'll call in the next panel. Okay?
Thank you, Your Honor.
And does the next panel come in that same?
Staggered. Yes, it's staggered.
Okay.
That's why when we're finished with the 79, I want to know if I have a jury.
That's so, good.
Yes.
Okay.
I want to know how many, and we'll know probably by the four causes.
Understood.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. Well, and so do you want an hour for lunch? Or do you,
So yeah, the only thing that I would say about the exhibits, and I mentioned this before, but perhaps we're getting even further, which is, you know, I've just told them about one part of their case that's not going to be necessary, and they disclosed when that witness would be testifying. If the state can even provide some shell, okay, right now mm-hmm. we have still had 44 witnesses and 13 mm-hmm. experts, mm-hmm. any guidance, I'm not holding them to the guidance, the court need not, I'm not going to ask the court to hold them mm-hmm. to the guidance, mm-hmm. of the gist of the case,
okay.
and their expected witness, we are going to be able to very, very quickly say, okay, then those lapels, that issue, it becomes irrelevant. And I'm going to be able to deliver to the state what they're going to ask the court for.
Okay, very good. So what we're going to do is we're going to take an hour lunch because we're almost finished with these. And then the court is going to instruct you all to meet and confer about what you all think about your cases and streamlining.
Okay.
Okay? All right.
Thank you.
All right. We're in recess.
There's more to come in the Rust shooting trial against Alec Baldwin from the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today. Press subscribe. Now.
Ready to level up your day? Then join me and my friends at LoneStarCasino.com. That's LoneStar Casino, where you can experience the thrill of Las Vegas, no matter where you are. LoneStarCasino.com is an absolutely free-to-play social casino with thousands of games, daily bonuses, free spins, and jackpots that pop like fireworks. Hit pause on life and hit play on LoneStarCasino.com.
Lone Star Casino is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit LoneStarCasino.com for more details.
Sign up today for an incredible welcome bonus. Play bold. Win big.
Third Love makes bras that actually fit, so they know this. If your bra feels uncomfortable, the problem isn't your body, it's your bra. Third Love designs for comfort first. Soft fabrics, support that doesn't dig, pinch, or slip. Bras that feel good and look good under everything you wear. Shop Third Love and explore over 60 sizes, including AA through H, and half cup sizes you won't find anywhere else. Get $15 off your first purchase at thirdlove.com with code PODCAST15.
Normally in these ads, you'd expect someone like me to ask you to buy something. But I want to ask you to do something different. I'm Dave Farenthold, and I'm a reporter for the New York Times. I'm an investigative reporter, which means that I follow the money, inside of government and outside of government. The point of my job is to find things people are trying to hide. It involves talking to lots of people. It involves looking through lots and lots of documents. And if there weren't folks like me to go beyond the surface to understand who is really shaping what the government does, the public will be left in the dark about what the government's doing with your tax money, what the government's doing to you through regulations and spending. If you're like me and you think this kind of journalism is important, seek out a news source that does firsthand, fact-based reporting. If that's the New York Times, thank you. If that's your local paper, that's great too, because where you get your information matters.
Ready to level up your day? Then join me and my friends at LoneStarCasino.com. That's LoneStar Casino, where you can experience the thrill of Las Vegas, no matter where you are. LoneStarCasino.com is an absolutely free-to-play social casino with thousands of games, daily bonuses, free spins, and jackpots that pop like fireworks. Hit pause on life and hit play on LoneStarCasino.com.
Lone Star Casino is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit LoneStarCasino.com for more details.
Sign up today for an incredible welcome bonus. Play bold. Win big. Ready to level up your day? Then join me and my friends at LoneStarCasino.com. That's LoneStar Casino, where you can experience the thrill of Las Vegas, no matter where you are. LoneStarCasino.com is an absolutely free-to-play social casino with thousands of games, daily bonuses, free spins, and jackpots that pop like fireworks. Hit pause on life and hit play on LoneStarCasino.com.
Lone Star Casino is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit LoneStarCasino.com for more details.
Sign up today for an incredible welcome bonus. Play bold. Win big. Ready to level up your day? Then join me and my friends at LoneStarCasino.com. That's LoneStar Casino, where you can experience the thrill of Las Vegas, no matter where you are. LoneStarCasino.com is an absolutely free-to-play social casino with thousands of games, daily bonuses, free spins, and jackpots that pop like fireworks. Hit pause on life and hit play on LoneStarCasino.com.
Lone Star Casino is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit LoneStarCasino.com for more details.
Sign up today for an incredible welcome bonus. Play bold. Win big. Ready to level up your day? Then join me and my friends at LoneStarCasino.com. That's LoneStar Casino, where you can experience the thrill of Las Vegas, no matter where you are. LoneStarCasino.com is an absolutely free-to-play social casino with thousands of games, daily bonuses, free spins, and jackpots that pop like fireworks. Hit pause on life and hit play on LoneStarCasino.com.
Lone Star Casino is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit LoneStarCasino.com for more details.
Sign up today for an incredible welcome bonus. Play bold. Win big.
Hey, it's Ryan Seacrest here, and I have discovered a fun new escape from the daily grind, Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has hundreds of social casino-style games as all free to play anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. So get to chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.